This has been a very challenging week for my family and I. And we've had to continuously set our minds on Christ, continuously surrender our fears and our pride. We've had to surrender our expectations of how we think things should be, and to settle our minds and our hearts on God. And so Matt so graciously offered to make other arrangements for me, but I tell you what, I needed this message. This message is about walking in faith. Walking in faith, and what kind of message, a sincere message about walking in faith, would it be without tests of faith? Right? So that's been the last couple of weeks. So I want to stand as we read Hebrews 11, 29 through 31, and I'll just read it. This is in the NIV version. Hebrews 11, 29. It says, "By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land. But when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the army had marched around them for 7 days. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient." Amen. You may be seated. So why are we looking at these stories, these three stories? What did the author intend by writing them for us to read? So over the last few weeks, we've been exhorted to trust God. Trust God. We've been challenged to remain steadfast in our faith. The NIV uses the term "by faith" 21 different times in Hebrews chapter 11, if you're reading in the NIV version. We should not pass over this because of the frequent use of it. We should not become comfortable with the term "by faith," because the reason why the author of Hebrews said this 21 times was to underscore it, to underline it, to highlight it, so that we know that this is an example for us, that we also should live by faith. I want to be like them. I want to be a person of faith that's not dependent upon my circumstances, not dependent upon what's going on around me, but my eyes and my heart are fixed on God no matter what. This is how I want to live. Do you guys want to live like that? So let's learn to walk by faith. The Israelites needed to learn how to walk by faith. They literally passed through a body of water on dry land by faith. They learned how to walk by faith. When the Israelites, the new breed of Israelites, marched around Jericho, they had to walk by faith. So we want to be like them. We want to believe that anything is possible. Jesus said, "Anything is possible to those who believe." That in itself might be hard to believe, that anything is possible to those who believe. But that's the kind of faith I want to have. Anything is possible. So we're encouraged by at least 20 stories, men and women who believed God. And yet, what made these men and women extraordinary was not simply that they had faith, but they had faith and did not in their lifetime experience the benefit of their faith in full. Because the promises that were given to them were not just made for them. They were made for us as well. Their faith was not swallowed up in death. The opposite of true, the opposite is true, actually. Their faith was amplified through history. Amplified through history. We know, we've observed that the small acts of faith build into something extraordinary, don't they? Because all things work together for the good of those who love God, who have been called according to his purpose. Are we called according to his purpose? It's much bigger than us. We don't understand why these things have to happen. But when Jesus comes back, we're going to look back and we're going to understand how this, X, Y, Z, why that happened and how it was connected together. We're going to understand why we have to go through the things that we have to go through. Hebrews 12:1 sums it up. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and run with perseverance the race marked out for us. We're included in that great cloud of witnesses. This is a race that they ran. It's a race that we run. It's a race that God has marked out for us, the body of believers. So our focus is on two groups today and one person. The two groups are the children of Israel, the Israelites who crossed the Red Sea. After that, the new breed of Israel who went into the Promised Land and marched around Jericho 7 times. So the basic... And then the other person is Rahab, which we talked about a few weeks ago. So the basic outline of the message would be this. The Exodus, that God split the Red Sea, and the Israelites walked through. After the Exodus, which these set of verses don't actually talk about, but I want to talk about it a little bit. After the Exodus, it's when the Israelites grumbled and complained. And God was making for himself a people who would trust them. So he tested them for 40 years in the wilderness. And when they were ready, they crossed the Red Sea and conquered. They crossed the Jordan River and then conquered Jericho. Only it was God who did the miracle. So the objective is to give you a history lesson, so that you guys will remember what was done. And I want to bubble up the aspects that relate to the subject of faith. And so hopefully this will encourage you to take steps of faith. It'll encourage you to be a person who walks in faith. Hebrews 11:29, by faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land, but when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. So the Exodus story is an example of those who walked by faith. It's covered in Exodus chapters 1 through 16. There's a lot there. I'm not going to read Exodus 1 through 16 or give you every single detail, but I will give you the Cliff Notes today. And I just want to say in advance that this is probably not my most comfortable way of presenting, is regurgitating facts, right? So, but I'm going to do it, okay? I'm going to step out of my comfort zone here because I'm walking by faith. So God called upon Moses to confront Pharaoh to tell him to free the Israelites. And Pharaoh was given 10 chances to free the Israelites. Remember that? And 10 times, Pharaoh either hardened his own heart or God hardened his heart, and he refused to let them go. So what happened was God released plagues upon Egypt, 10 plagues. Because his heart was hard, he would not listen to Moses, and he would not let the people go. The Lord encouraged Israel through Moses in Exodus 6:6. And this was God's promise to them. So it's important for us to understand that God had a promise for them. I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will free you from being slaves to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with mighty acts of judgment. I will take you as my own people. This is what the Lord was doing. He was taking them as his own people. And I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. And I will bring you to the land I swore with uplifted hand to give Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you as a possession. I am the Lord. So this we see is why the Lord wanted to bring them out from under slavery. But while Pharaoh's heart was hard, this is important, while Pharaoh's heart was hard, so were the hearts of the Israelites. Finally, after the 10th plague, they were released. But then Pharaoh changed his mind again as they were released, and he sent the army in pursuit of them. Now, the Israelites did not have faith at this time. The Israelites were terrified. They were terrified because Moses had taken a different route. Moses had taken a route to the sea, and Israel became boxed in between the desert and the sea. So they didn't know what was going to happen. And I doubt even Moses at this time knew what was going to happen. It says in Psalm 106, 7, very poetically, it confirms what I thought when they read this. How is this so far an example of faith? Because it's not. When our ancestors were in Egypt, they gave no thought to your miracles. They did not remember your many kindnesses, and they rebelled by the sea. This is how we're classifying this period of time. They rebelled by the sea, the Red Sea, yet he saved them for his name's sake to make his mighty power known. To make his mighty power known. So then Moses lifted up his staff and he declared in Exodus 14:13-14, do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance that the Lord will bring to you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you, and you only need to stand still. Isn't that incredible? It's a good speech. So then he lifted up his staff, and something amazing happened. The waters parted. There's this wind, an easterly wind that blew in overnight. This whole thing, it's estimated to only take less than 6 hours. They left at midnight. That's when they left. And overnight, this wind blew, a strong easterly wind, and parted the sea and created dry land for them to cross. So I was thinking, God could have done this a different way. He could have confused the Egyptians as they were closing in and caused them to turn on themselves. I don't know, he could have done it any other way. But God was doing this for the reason to show his glory and to show his power. So he allowed them to go in like an impossible situation. And they were desperate. They didn't know what to do. And God himself brought the miracle. God took the first step. He took the first step. He takes the first steps toward us, doesn't he? And that encouraged them to take the next step, and the next step, and the next step. And their faith was literally to be still and to know that he was God and to walk. That's where the faith came in. You know, God bent the laws of physics. That's no problem for God, is it? Not at all. Remember when Jesus calmed the storm? In Matthew 8:23-27. Then he got into the boat, and his disciples followed him. Suddenly, a furious storm came up on the lake, and the waves swept over the boat. But Jesus was sleeping. He was still. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Lord, save us, we're going to drown." You see the parallel? And he replied, "You have little faith. Why are you so afraid?" And then he got up and rebuked the winds and the wave, and it was completely calm. And the men were amazed and asked, "What kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him." So parting the Red Sea was no problem for God. And the miracle that we're looking for is no problem for God. We just need to be still and trust him. But what was on display here was not the incredible miracle that God did. In the book of Hebrews, what's on display is their faith. And regarding this Red Sea crossing, Psalm 106:12 says, "Then, after they crossed, then they believed his promises and sang his praise." Then they believed his promises and saved and sang his praise. This is when they believed. So they were full of fear. They were terrified, unbelief, and grumbling and complaining against Moses and against God all the way up until the miracle. It shows you the great love that God had for his people. They weren't ready, but he was going to make them ready. He was going to make them a people. Then the Lord confused the army at that point. As the Israelites crossed and they were closing in, they decided to go through the water as well. God confused the army, and the waters caved in and drowned the Egyptians. So then after the Exodus, but then a short time, about 2.5 months in, all the cattle that they had brought with them starting to get pretty lean. They were hungry. They were thirsty. They didn't have water roaming around in the desert. And so they cried out to Moses and they cried out to God. But I wonder, maybe we would do the same. I mean, with our kid at our side, holding our children, I would be like, what's going to happen? Are they going to die? Sure seems like it. So that period after the Red Sea crossing was not an example of faith. And that's why between verses 29 and 30, there was a 40-year gap. So per Hebrews 3:16 through 19, we already have covered this in the past. But it was characterized by unbelief. It says in Hebrews 3:16 through 19, "Who were they who heard and rebelled? Were they not those Moses led out of Egypt? And with whom was he angry with for 40 years? Was it not those who sinned, whose bodies perished in the wilderness? And to whom did God swear that they would never enter his rest, if not to those who disobeyed? So we see that they were not able to enter because of their unbelief." So they grumbled and complained. And they said in Exodus 16:3, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted." I think that was an exaggeration. "But you have brought us into the desert to starve this entire assembly to death." They wished to go back to Egypt. And to some of you who were around in the 80s, there's this great song by Keith Green where he thought it was so great until I listened to it again. It just doesn't match today's standards. But so you want to go back to Egypt. You guys remember that? How many remember that song? Oh, yeah. So you want to go back to Egypt. They're eating manna burgers and manna souffle. Banana bread, that's right. So this is what the core of what Hebrews is trying to warn us about. To stay the course, don't give up, to have faith. To pass through, we need faith. To get to the other side, we need faith. I want faith. Do you want faith? Then we come to Jericho. This is after the 40 years. It says, by faith, this is Hebrews, by faith the walls of Jericho fell after the army had marched around them for 7 days. So they were prevented from crossing to the other side. Because I can imagine at the end of their journey, there they are, right in front of the Jordan River. On the other side of the Jordan River is the Promised Land. To give you perspective, Jericho was only 2 miles from the Jordan River. So they were sitting and looking. They knew that their solution to all their problem was right there on the other side of the river. But God said, no, you need to stay right here. You need to stay right here. Also, remember the story of the Good Samaritan. The Good Samaritan went down from Jerusalem to Jericho. So that's how close it is to the Gospels. It was about 17 miles. Jericho was about 17 miles from Jerusalem. But you should know that this was a city to be had. This city had very good agriculture, which was uncommon for a place in the desert. It had many palm trees. It was on a trade route. It was a bustling city. It was a small city, but it was a bustling city. And can you imagine God saying, I want you to destroy that city? Can you imagine wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, eating banana bread? And God providing you, that was really awesome. But all along, you're going, we're going to the Promised Land. We're going to the Promised Land. We're going to the Promised Land. And here is this city that's going to solve all of your dreams. It's going to be a fulfillment of everything you've ever longed for. And God said, no, destroy it. That strikes me as a bit of a downer. It's to be devoted to the Lord. He said in verse 19 of Joshua 6, Joshua commanded the Israelites, all the silver and gold and the articles of bronze and iron are to be sacred to the Lord and must go into the treasury. This is not to be consumed by Israel. This is for the Lord. In Joshua 6:17, and the city and all that is within it shall be devoted to the Lord for destruction. This is in the ESV version. So that might seem like a waste, but that's what our worship looks like, doesn't it? Giving our all to the Lord, giving our first fruits to the Lord. And sometimes I think that the first fruits are the hardest things to give up. But he's called us to give it up. Joshua declared a curse on anyone who tried to rebuild the city. This is a done deal. He said in 6:26, at that time Joshua pronounced this solemn oath, cursed before the Lord is the one who undertakes to rebuild this city, Jericho. At the cost of his firstborn son will he lay his foundation. At the cost of his youngest son will he lay up his gates. There's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end it leads to death. God said no. Destroy it. Never rebuild it. Because I have a better promise for you. I have something better for you. And about this new generation, they believed God's promise. They believed God's promise. They believed God's provision that God would provide so strongly that they would sacrifice the thing they wanted. They had their eyes set on the promise, not the temporary pleasure of the moment. So I want that sort of faith. Rahab, verse 31. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who are disobedient. So I told the story a few weeks ago, so I'm not going to give you it all, but I'll give you a summary. Rahab, the prostitute, she was forever immortalized as a prostitute, even though she was a believer. Think about that. Hid two Israelites, spies, in her home in Jericho. And because of this, her family was spared, she and her family. They were spared destruction, and then their family joined the Israelites. And we learn from Hebrews that this was an act of faith. And I think that it was, came up with a few reasons why I thought that it was an act of faith, is because she could have, it could have ended in Jericho finding out that she hid the spies and she would have been killed for it. So she took a risk. She knowingly aligned herself with the God of Israel, knowing that her entire city would be destroyed and they had nothing to go back to. And then also, Rahab became the first Canaanite west of the Jordan to put her faith in God. So a woman who previously had a bad reputation was named as a person of faith. And also in James, it says that her act was counted as righteousness. Her act was counted as righteousness. So now the Israelites were intent on destroying the city, but God showed again, okay, this is awesome how this is playing out. God showed them again by making the first move. God made the first move. There were 40,000 Israelites ready, armed and ready for battle. They rushed over the Jordan River, and they were standing in front of Jericho. It was a walled city and with the gates shut, and they were just waiting for Joshua to say, go and overtake this city. But then the angel of the Lord met with Joshua and changed course. I'm going to read you this because I think it's way more powerful than I could even explain here. Joshua 5, 13, 6 through 5. Now when Joshua, 5, 13 through 6, 5. Now when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with a drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went up to him and asked, are you for us or for our enemies? Neither, he replied. But as the commander of the Lord, I have now come. Then Joshua fell face down to the ground in reverence and asked him, what message does my Lord have for his servant? The commander of the army, the Lord's army replied, take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy. And Joshua did so. Chapter 6, 1. Now the gates of Jericho were securely barred because of the Israelites, and no one went out and no one came in. Then the Lord said to Joshua, see, I have delivered Jericho into your hands along with its king and its fighting men. March around the city for 7 days. March around the city once with all the armed men. Do this for 6 days. Have seven priests carry trumpets and ram's horns in front of the ark. On the seventh day, march around the city 7 times with the priests blowing the trumpets. Huh? When you hear them sound a long blast of trumpets, have the whole army give a loud shout, and then the wall of the city will collapse and the army will go up, everyone straight in. Sounds kind of ridiculous, doesn't it? Sounds kind of ridiculous. But again, just as with the parting of the Red Sea, God was going to do the miraculous work here. God was going to do something so extraordinary, so out of the ordinary, that they were going to know that God was with them. So again, rather than, just as when they crossed the Red Sea, all they had to do was walk. And then God caused the fortress walls to crumble. Sometimes all we need to do is just trust God, to walk, to stand still and see his deliverance. And so it was by faith that the walls of Jericho fell. So remember, few weeks ago, this was Mark 9 was preached in the first service, and I referenced it. When the disciples couldn't cast out a demon of the possessed boy. And this was covered in, this is an important story because it was covered in all the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And Jesus ended up casting the demon out. And later the disciples asked Jesus, why couldn't we cast it out? And Jesus said, because you have so little faith. So apparently they had very little faith, because in the next breath he said that truly I tell you, if you have the faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. Nothing will be impossible for you. But in Mark, it says that the mountain will be moved for you. The mountain will be moved for you. We may face impossible odds. We may face something that seems so incredibly hard or ridiculous. Doesn't make sense. But we need to prepare our hearts right now. We need to prepare our hearts to be obedient to Him. And to do something as ridiculous as speak to the mountain. Because He's the one that's going to do it. So the examples given in Hebrews are to encourage us to keep believing, keep trusting, keep our eyes fixed on Jesus. I've needed to keep telling myself this over and over the last couple of days, when dark thoughts would creep in, when the lies of the enemy were at my door, I had to say no. No. I'm going to believe in my God. I'm going to believe that God can intervene in this situation. We need to trust God to bring about His greater purpose, His greater purpose. And this is choosing to walk in faith. And this is a process. Walking in faith is a process. It's like a mustard seed that needs to grow. It's part of what we have been predestined to become. To be conformed, as it says in Romans 8, conformed into the image of Christ. That's what God wants to work out in us, to be conformed into the image of Christ. And that is a lifelong process. We haven't arrived, but we're pressing on toward that goal, to be more like Him until we meet Him. So again, in Romans 12, 1 through 3, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, this is what this is all pushing toward. This is the, and therefore, this is what it's there for, right? All of this is for this goal. Since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith. He's the perfecter of our faith, which means that it's a process. For the joy set before Him, He endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider Him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. So let's pray. Father, I thank You for our time today. I thank You for the work that You are doing in people here. And this message is going to apply to everyone here differently, but I pray that they would catch what You are communicating to them, that You would bring about a conformity to Your Son, Father, that You would do the work in their heart to make them a greater person of faith, a greater man or woman of faith who trust you, who believe you, to believe that your will is going to be done. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your name, let your glory be known. Let your kingdom come. Let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our manna. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but like you did with the Israelites before Pharaoh, deliver us from evil. Yours is the kingdom and the glory and the power forever. Amen.